Hello, and welcome to the Healthy Balanced Birth and Beyond podcast. I'm Olivia, your host, and on this podcast, we will talk about everything related to the journey to conceive, pregnancy, labor, birth, postpartum, parenthood, and beyond. This is a safe space where birth professionals, birthing people, expectant parents, and partners can come on and share their knowledge or personal experiences with our listeners. The goal of this podcast is to create connections, share stories, information, and resources to educate and empower people in their own personal journey. Good morning, listeners. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Healthy Balanced Birth and Beyond podcast. This week, I have a special guest. All of my guests are special, but this one, her name is Jocelyn, and we actually connected through Instagram. So Jocelyn is a bilingual language development coach. Is that the correct word that you'd want to use? Or speech language pathologist, I would say. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So she specializes in working with parents who need advice on speech for their children and their babies as they grow and develop. So Jocelyn, would you like to tell everyone a bit about you?
Sure. Hi, everybody. As Olivia said, I'm Jocelyn. I am a bilingual speech pathologist, and I've been practicing in Brooklyn for over a decade. So a lot of my work focuses around parents of young children. And I think a lot of people don't realize how early speech therapy can begin and be impactful for a family. And so I feel like it's my mission to get the word out there. The earlier that you start, the better that it's going to be for your child's overall development.
Yeah. And it's so, so important. And I think that's one thing too, that I have always heard from people is that people think that babies don't pick up on like language and words like at a young age, like very, very young. And they totally do. But like you were saying, like it's important to talk about it so people know, but also to be mindful and be aware of like if your baby's language is not developing. Because if you do need to get some sort of intervention and or help, you want to do that when they're as young as possible.
Exactly. And early intervention has been proven. If you intervene before the age of three, just because of how the brain develops, the brain is able to catch up and make those connections so that later on in life, your child is going to have a very typical development.
Right. And before we hop into all the topics that we're going to chat about today, I just wanted to let everybody know that Jocelyn is going to be having a live series on September 14th. So will you briefly tell everybody a bit about it?
Sure. So as I said, it's kind of my mission to help parents help their children as early as possible. So in my live series, what I'm going to be doing is covering a few different strategies that parents can use and incorporate into their very hectic lifestyle. So using lots of the routines that you're already using and building speech and language into that.
Yeah. So I mean, essentially just giving people like tips and tricks of what to do, nothing too crazy. And then if people needed additional help, they could reach out to you as well, correct?
Absolutely.
Awesome. So yeah, we're going to hop into just talking about infant and child language development and where it starts, where it stems from, what we can do to help it. So what do you see that most people come to you with?
So for little children, a lot of the questions that I get are around how many sounds a child should be making, what toys are appropriate, what I can be doing with my baby. I think especially when children are under 6 months and they don't really do much, it's hard as parents to figure out how to play with your child because your child isn't responding to you. And I think it's human nature as our social beings to do something and wait for a response. If you have a very young child, you might not get a response or you might not get the response that you're hoping for. And so I think that it's important for parents to learn a little bit about child development, to know what's typical and what a response can look like for a 6-month-old.
Yeah. And I remember, I just thought of this while you were talking. I remember before I had my daughter, I was in the grocery store and I saw this mom talking to her daughter. She was probably, I would guess, like around one, but she was going through the store and she was talking to her about like the different food that they saw, the different colors. And I thought it was so interesting because
a lot of the time you just see people with their kids going through the store just trying to get through as fast as possible in and out, which I totally understand. But I hadn't seen many people who were slowing down with their children or their babies and trying to teach them different things or saying different things and seeing if they responded, seeing if they understood. So that's one thing I started doing with my daughter, even when she was younger. I just talked to her all the time. And plus, like, if you're home with your baby, you don't really have a lot of adult interaction during the day. So you just kind of have conversations with your baby. But I feel like her language has blown me away. And I find it so interesting to see when baby's language really starts to take off. And every baby does it differently. And it, like we always say, like, every baby's different. There shouldn't be like such a focus on like the comparison of my child's doing this, your child's doing that. But I think that it's important to talk about, like you said, when they should be starting to be saying different sounds and when they're putting them together, when they're starting to use words, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So I think it's really amazing that you're talking to your daughter all the time. That's, I think, the biggest obstacle is finding ways to just incorporate it into what you're doing. Because as you said, you're trying to just get through the day, do the chores and the errands that you have in front of you. You might not necessarily be thinking about how to engage your child mm-hmm. with that. But yeah, all children develop kind of at their own pace. And real language milestones begin around 3 to 6 months. So even that early, you're going to see children responding to you by smiling or by cooing, making mm-hmm. little open bowel sounds. And those are really important for development because those cooing sounds, those oo-oos and ah-ahs, are what form the vocal tract and what allow us to start to babble and put sounds together to make words. So each step is important in its own right. Each child comes to that step at their own time, mm-hmm. but it's important as a parent to know how to encourage those milestones to happen and how to move your child along a little bit further.
Yeah, I think, and it's so fun once they start to like coo and try out new sounds, because you're literally watching them like realize that they have a voice, that they can make these sounds, and they'll just be playing and all of a sudden they'll just make like a new sound, like a screech or like you said, like a vowel sound, and they just stop and they're like, oh, that's me. Like, I can make these sounds. I just think it's so fun to watch.
Yeah, it's amazing because every day in a baby's life is like a light bulb moment. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
Yeah. And I think too, I always like to remind people of like when babies are just seem so busy, they're like, oh, they're so busy. Or I've heard people also say the term nosy. It always bothers me because I'm like, they're not nosy. They've literally never seen and or done these things before. Like, this is all brand new to them. We as adults have seen these things, obviously, because we've been around for longer than a few months. But I think it's important to remember that when they're doing these things, they're doing them for the first time. So for them, it's huge. And I think even just celebrating those little moments is so important too.
Yeah, and that was exactly what I was thinking. I think that we need to respect that newness and act happy and surprised and share in that experience with the baby because it really is so exciting for them. I was on the phone with my cousin's baby the other day and mm-hmm. she's 4 months old. So I was making lots of different lip sounds with her. And watching her try to imitate me and get so excited when she got close, she didn't quite get it at that moment, mm-hmm. but she was trying, she was happy, she was giggling, and it was just so amazing to see it. And I think for her, seeing the excitement on the other end was mm-hmm. really exciting for her.
Yeah, I totally agree. I remember, I don't know who said it, it's one of the books that I was reading on child and infant development. But it was talking about the importance of like celebrating all of these things with your children. Like, your children need to feel like you are just like absolutely over the moon with everything that they do. And because it's true, like, it's important, it's new and it's exciting, and you want to encourage that. You want to encourage them and pump them up when they're doing these new exciting things. Because like you said, it's like a light bulb moment. They're like, aha, like, I can do this. I know how to do this. I know how to say this. This is new. This is exciting. And I love celebrating the little things. So I think it makes it fun for everybody.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, when babies have that encouragement, that positive reinforcement, that's what makes them want to keep going and want to replicate the activity. So I think even for parents that are a little less excitable, a little more like low key, there are different ways that you can celebrate and different ways that you can show your baby that they're doing a great job. You can do clapping, you can make little cheering sounds for them. It doesn't have to be a huge over the top moment.
Yeah. And even like you said, just like imitating, like going back and forth so they see you doing it too.
Yeah, imitating is so helpful for those really little infants. Even up to the toddler years, imitating them when they're saying their new words is so encouraging. They're like, oh yeah, I'm almost there. I've almost got this word.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so fun to see. And before we hopped on the podcast, I was sharing with you that like my daughter just turned one last month, or in July now, because it's September. But her language just like is blowing me away. Like all the words that she's starting to say, it's just so cool to see. But I would love to hear about like how the different sounds that babies start to make when they're younger, help their development, and how you can help them, little tips and tricks that you could do to help them with words and or sounds.
Right. So we were saying that everything begins with cooing. So those initial coos are your child's vowels. They're the vowels of your language. So in English, most babies will start with the oo and the ah. Mm-hmm. And for parents, I think something really helpful to do, because you are encouraging tummy time together with this, is to kind of put a mirror in front of your baby so that your baby can look at their mouth while they're making their sounds. And that can be intrinsically motivating. That's going to give them that motivation to go on. You can lay next to them. They can see your mouth as well, but that's going to be the basis for all other sounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's so fun to watch them look at themselves in the mirror. It's like, it's so cool, because they're like, oh wait, is that another baby? Is that me? I'm not really sure. but like you said, so they can see the way that their mouth is moving, because then in their brain, they start to learn, okay, if I move my mouth this way, then it makes that sound, right? Is that what you're saying?
Right. And that's going to be super helpful as they begin blowing raspberries, because that's a little bit more motor involvement, right? If you're just opening and closing your mouth and some sound comes out, like, that's pretty nifty. But when you're blowing raspberries, there's a lot that has to happen. Mm-hmm. Your lips have to come together, air has to come out, you have to make a sound at the same time. And that's what's going to lead children to start bringing their lips together more and making those sounds like buh, puh, mm, which are going to be really helpful for those first words, mm-hmm. which mostly have those sounds in them. So something really helpful for developing those sounds is animal sounds. Animal sounds are really great. Mm-hmm. Kids are going to try to imitate those sounds, even from as young as 6 months. They may try imitating those animal sounds, and that's going to really help to get their lips together.
Yeah, like the ooh, ooh, ah, ah, like a monkey.
Right.
That's just what I thought of.
Ooh, ah, ah, like a monkey. A book that I really love for that is Muba La La La.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That's my daughter's current favorite right now. That's so funny.
Yeah. And it's just the way that she puts the sounds together is really silly for a young kid. And they're like, oh, haha, that's really cool. I want to try to do that too.
Yeah. I will link that book in the show notes, because Sandra Boynton is the author, and her books are super helpful in terms of babies learning new sounds and simpler words that they can hear and repeat. I think the way that she writes books is brilliant.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think it's really difficult to find children's books that are actually written for children and that have that shortened language. And I think that a book like Muba La 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 really shows you the best way for your child to start using those sounds and engaging in sound play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the simplicity of it. So one thing that you had shared when we were going back and forth in our emails to decide what we were going to talk about on today's episode was when you might suspect a tongue tie and what to do about it. So I would love for you to share how tongue ties can impact language development with everybody, because I don't think that this is talked about enough.
Okay, awesome. And I like how it's threading into the sound play because really the first time that you're going to pick up on a tongue and a lip tie is during breastfeeding. So a lot of parents come to me because they're having some difficulty with breastfeeding. Either it's super painful for them or their child is crying a lot at the breast. So that would be the first reason that I would check for a tongue tie. For a lot of parents, if there's a posterior tongue tie, a tie that's in the back of the tongue, you might not realize it during breastfeeding because your child's tongue is able to elevate to extract milk. So while you're doing this sound play, what you're going to notice is that your child is going to have difficulty making some of those back sounds. Those sounds like Ks and Gs are going to be much more difficult because to make those sounds, the back of the tongue needs to come up. And if your tongue is anchored in the back, it's not going to be able to make that movement.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Just one other thing about that is 6 months is also around the time that you start introducing foods. And what you may see with a child who does have a posterior tongue tie is a lot of gagging when you introduce food.
Yeah, and I think I just feel like the topic of tongue ties is so important because it can impact so many things. It can impact the way that they eat, it can impact the way that they breastfeed or bottle feed. It can impact the way that they speak. It can impact even the way that they breathe. Like, there are so many different things that tongue ties impact. And like you said, there can be tongue ties in the front, but there can also be posterior tongue ties or cheek ties or lip ties that we just don't know about unless we see somebody who is a specialist in it. So I love that you talk about that because it's important. It's very, very important. And a lot of people, their babies are going through all of these issues and the parents don't know what it is. And a lot of the time, the culprit is a tongue tie or a lip tie.
Yeah, and I feel like there's a lot of misinformation out on the internet because of a little bit of a misunderstanding about the procedures to remediate a tongue tie. A lot of unknowns about that. And of course, if you have a baby, you're not going to want to do surgery. So there are other things that you can do. You can do them before intervening in a surgical way. You could do them after intervening in a surgical way, or you can do them as an alternative. There are stretches and exercises that can be done that would really help range of motion and it would ease breastfeeding, bottle feeding, and it would also lead to some improvements with speech and language development.
I love that you share that because for me, I always try and find like the holistic route first. And then if something does need to be done, then you can look at that option as well. But there are different stretches, like you said, and different things that you can do, different exercises that are less invasive than a surgery. And granted, the surgery that they do for a tongue tie is not as invasive as we really think it is. It may seem a little bit more overwhelming to a new parent. So I love that you share that there are alternatives and different ways to go about it because I think that's important to share too.
Yeah, but I think it's important for parents to know that if they do suspect that their child has a tongue tie, as you said, to seek out a professional who has experience with it, because unfortunately, there's no tongue tie training protocol in
I know.
anybody's studies. So you have to seek out that training on your own. So there are some ENTs who specialize in it, some dentists that specialize in it, some speech therapists, some occupational therapists. There is a list of preferred providers on the internet. I think it's preferredproviders.net, and it has by state who is actually licensed to treat these things.
Maybe we could include that in the show notes for people to look at as well, because I, like you were saying, there's not like a very specific list and or like resource for it. So maybe including that would be helpful to everybody who's listening.
Yeah, and I will send you the exact link because it may be preferred provider, it may be preferred provider tongue tie, something like
Okay,
that.
perfect. That sounds great. So in terms of when you suspect a tongue tie and you say you seek advice and or a lactation consultant or an ENT, then from there, what you choose to do about it, whether it's doing the laser surgery or doing exercises, what do you feel like the next step is?
So I do feel like In any case, whether or not you decide to intervene surgically, it's so important to do exercises because the tongue tie is fascia, which is deep within the muscle. And so if we're not continually stretching that, you're going to see very little improvement and you're not going to get any of that range of motion that you're looking for. Other than that, I think that it is important as parents to know what range of motion should look like, how the tongue should be able to move, and encourage those movements through regular activities that you're doing. So, toothbrushing, eating food, again, going back to that mirror and having the child make faces using their tongue movements.
Yeah, I think one thing when you were just specifically talking about the tongue, it made me think of, I can't remember his name. There's a pediatric doctor who, gosh, I watched it so many years ago, but he was talking about how babies, when they're so young, like literally newborns, can imitate you. And doing something as simple as holding your baby in front of you and sticking your tongue out and then waiting for their reaction and seeing if they'll imitate you doing the same thing. Very young babies are capable of doing that. So doing something as simple as holding your baby and sticking your tongue out so they can see it might sound silly, but I feel like sometimes the silliest things are the most helpful for them.
Yeah, that mirroring is so cool. It's such an amazing thing that baby brains are capable of, that they can simply look at their parent and do exactly what their parent is doing.
And I love sharing stuff like that because sometimes I feel like people are like, oh, they're just babies. And I'm like, do you realize how much is going on in their little brains on a day-to-day basis? It is mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing.
I looked something up the other day and it was even surprising to me that I've been studying this for so long, but babies produce 500 million new neurons per second. Per second.
Per
That's
second.
amazing. That's like so many new connections firing off. And this all happens until the age of three when we start like trimming the fat. So those first 3 years are crucial.
And it's just, and you were talking about it earlier. I don't remember the exact wording that you used, but like the brain development that's happening. Like we're literally, like their brains are starting to get wired as to different sounds, as to what different words mean, different movements, like everything. It's insane. And we have to, I think it's important to A, like you said, talk about how much is going on in their little brains and be mindful of that and be mindful of what's around them, what's overstimulating, what's not enough stimulation for them. I think just opening up this conversation is so important.
Yeah, I agree completely.
I did have a question that wasn't on our little outline of what we were going to chat about today. I just wanted to see what your thoughts were on like pacifiers past a certain age or having them frequently throughout the day, and if you feel like that impacts speech development or language development.
This is another hot topic, and I think there are a lot of different camps about it. For me, as a speech pathologist, I always give guidance. I like to provide you with the pros and cons of each. I'm never going to tell you what to do because every family is different.
Oh, agreed,
But
for sure.
for me, I believe that pacifiers should be used between birth and 6 months. They can definitely be used. Not every child needs a pacifier at that point, but they're really helpful for comforting and for getting your child to soothe. After that age, I think that it's important to start transitioning your child to a better self-soothing routine so that they're able to soothe themselves. And getting rid of the pacifier before your teeth come in is really important for your overall oral motor development. So a lot of babies do start getting their first teeth around 6, 7, 8 months. So getting rid of the pacifier at that time would really prevent any orthodontic issues from occurring.
And like you said, I'm never looking to tell people what they should or shouldn't be doing because every family is different. Whatever works for your family is what you should be doing. I'm just always trying to look at everything from like a more like stand back sort of view to try and get all the different sides, all of the information, and if there is something that could help somebody, I always like to share that.
Yeah, and I think that having that guidance, being able to transition your child before the age of 9 months is going to make your life so much easier, because if you make it past the point of 9 months and try to take that pacifier away, you're going to get a whole lot of personality back at you, and it is not going to be fun. It's going to take so much longer. It is going to be so much more difficult, and you're going to have to create some type of system that your child buys into to really get rid of it.
Yeah, that just made me think of, I'm pretty sure we literally had like a bye-bye bottle party for my brother when he was too old to be, he didn't need to have a bottle anymore. He just liked to have it. It was just a comfort thing at nighttime. So I know what you mean. And I've worked with a lot of families who have dealt with similar things in terms of transitioning away from a pacifier. So yeah, I would love to hear the different strategies that you use to engage with your newborns or infants, things that parents can do, to do that.
Awesome. I really love to go along with other stages of development. So I think it's important to recognize that speech development doesn't happen in isolation. It's happening along with lots of other different things. So the more that we can encourage all those phases of development at once, the better it's going to be for your child and overall development. So for newborns, because they are really working on developing their vision and developing their hearing, I do a lot of activities with eye tracking. So something I might do with a real newborn baby is either have them on my lap, propped on my knee, or on their belly, and I'll put two black and white pictures to the side, just out of their vision, so that they have to look towards it. Because what happens with babies is their eyes don't yet move from side to side. So in order to look at something in the corner of their field of vision, they'll have to completely turn their head towards it. And then the really cool thing that we can do with that is start to pair it with sound. So having a rattle or having mommy's voice to the side is going to help your child not only look towards that black and white object, but also to look towards the source of sound. And then you can play with taking the picture away and having them only look towards sound, or taking the sound away and having them only look towards the picture.
Yeah, I love that you're intertwining the two because it like they're going through so many different stages of development at the same, like there are so many different aspects of it. So intertwining them together is not only beneficial for the baby, but it's cool to see.
It's really cool to see. And if you think about how babies learn language, what we were talking about earlier, looking at their parents' mouth and seeing what their mouth can do, they can't do that until their eyes are able to focus. So doing that eye development work is so important. Doing that hearing work is so important so that they can tune into the correct sounds. And then you kind of put all the puzzle pieces together and start doing some of those mirror and reflection activities when they become a little bit older.
Yeah, so when you work with parents, do you currently, because of the world situation, are you doing stuff virtually with them to help them through this? Like, what does it look like in person versus virtually? Is it still the same sort of thing?
It's been a really interesting transition for me, because as a therapist, my practice is to get down on the floor with a
I
baby
know.
and really show parents how everything is done. So I'll kind of model what the behavior looks like, show them how to do it, and then have the parent do it back for me. Now, because everything is virtual, it really has become a coaching model, and I don't hate it. I feel like it is a lot more empowering for parents to be able to guide them through an activity and have them do the activity and get feedback rather than watching somebody do it. And it's also getting parents a lot more involved in the process, because I feel like if you're watching somebody do it, you can just kind of sit back and relax for a while. But when I'm doing speech therapy with a family, I'm only there for 30 minutes one time per week, which really, in the grand scheme of life for your baby, that is so little time. And you're going to be doing these activities the rest of the day. So this virtual coaching thing has really been awesome.
Yeah, I'm always interested to hear how this world situation has shifted and change things. And sometimes I feel like there are pros and sometimes there are obviously cons. But I think figuring out like what the best balance is and how to make it work for both sides is what's important. And it sounds like you've done a really good job of doing that.
I hope so. I don't know how long I'm going to be in this situation, but I think that it's been a learning curve for me. But right now, since we've been in this for 6 months, I have the hang of it. And it's really cool to watch parents taking the rein and figuring this all out for themselves. I feel like it's much more naturalistic.
Yeah. I was going to say, and also it must feel very empowering for them too. In that moment to know that, so you're there, you're helping them, you're guiding them, whether it's in person or whether it's virtually, but you're giving them these tips and tricks that they can do with their baby, whether it's during a session with you or outside of a session with you, knowing that they have these different things that they can try out that are, they can do just by themselves with their baby. And like you said earlier, I feel like sometimes people are just like, I don't know what to do sort of thing, you know? So that's where I think your work is so important, because you're empowering parents to take it on themselves and you're giving them new things to try with their baby that they might not have known about and or tried otherwise.
Yeah. And I think that's just, it's, once you figure it out, it is empowering and it's amazing to be able to watch language connections happen. But until that time, you're kind of lost and looking for support. And so I'm happy to be able to provide that support to families, even if it is in a new way. I think it's a new way that may even be the wave of the future, just because of how helpful it's been.
Yeah. And I'm glad it's been helpful for you on your end too. Another thing I wanted to ask about, because it was a piece of advice that somebody gave me even before my daughter was born, they were talking about the importance of reading books to your baby in terms of their language developing. So that's something that we started doing when my daughter was, I don't even know. Once she could really like actually see and like focus on books, we started doing it. We would just lay on the floor and I'd hold them above us, or we'd do tummy time and I'd put it down on the floor in front of us. But it became a part of our daily routine, and then we always did books before bedtime. And I truly feel that it's helped her language develop so much. I was saying to you before, like, her language is blowing me away. She's literally saying a new word almost every single day at this point. It's really incredible to see.
Yeah. And she's at the perfect age where that language happens. I love book reading. It's my favorite activity. Whenever I'm doing therapy sessions, I have at least two books in my bag. Mm-hmm. The secret to books is kind of, as I was saying before, a lot of children's books are not written for children.
Right.
So I think the secret to books is making them appropriate for your child. And so you can read some books with fidelity. I think bedtime stories are a great time to read books with fidelity. But when you're using them throughout the day with your child and really building those book reading routines, it means choosing books with a simpler vocabulary, or you yourself providing that simpler vocabulary and choosing some key phrases to go with the book. So I have a lot of books with repeating characters in it.
Yeah.
So we might play games with like, Froggy, where are you? Or Kitty, where are you? So that the child is hearing those phrases over and over. That then becomes the key phrase for that book. And then when your child wants that book, they're going to use a whole phrase to request the book rather than just bringing a book over to you to read.
Oh, that's an interesting, I've never heard that. I like that a lot. Giving them a phrase to work off of, and that's what they connect with the book. That's so cool.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've noticed kids have favorite books, and have the books that they're going to go back to over and over. And so if you have two or three of those key phrases, it's really going to enable your child to use language to request rather than just handing something over to you.
Yeah.
Because what kids do when they don't have the language is they use other means of communication. They gesture or they grunt or they whine towards you. And so it's your goal as parents to get them to communicate in a little bit of a clearer way.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I totally forgot about this, but you saying that, finding different ways to communicate if they don't have the words. It's so true. I remember there was a family that I was working with and their son was, he was older. I don't remember exactly how old he was. This was a long time ago, but instead of using words, what he would do is he would come over to you and he would take your hand and bring you somewhere. And so what I did with them, granted, I'm not an infant and child language development pathologist. I was saying to them, I was like, we have to, because they had asked me, they're like, what do you think we should do? I was like, well, first of all, you should find a pathologist who can help you. But second of all, like things that you can do at home that I've seen with other families is encouraging them to use language, encouraging them to use those words, because that will, they'll realize, okay, if I say this, then they will understand that that's a way of communicating outside of not saying anything at all and just pointing or dragging someone somewhere.
Right. And so there are so many other ways that you can use to communicate. I think in an instance like that, providing the child with some manual sign, some baby sign language, yes, would be really helpful. Mm-hmm. And picture communication boards are also really helpful. I think giving your child something visual to look towards so that when they are frustrated or when they don't yet have the words to communicate, they're able to point to a picture. So they can't get away with that grunting because the grunting doesn't really mean anything.
Right.
But if you're pointing to a picture, you're really signaling, you're really giving your choice. And I think for babies, even we talk a lot about empowering parents, but babies need to feel empowered also so that they want to continue communicating.
Yeah. And do you have like a specific like template that you use like for pictures? If say you had a picture board, is that something that you share with your clients or in your live series?
So I will be going over picture communication a little bit in the live series. I use something called the Noun Project, which is a collection of black and white images. And okay, you can combine pretty much any icon, the simpler, the better. And depending on the child, some children do well with two pictures. Some are ready for three pictures. I keep them very simple and they are all tailored to the individual child.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was just thinking when you were saying that about imagining, this is one thing that I've tried to think about with my daughter, is like how they develop, how they think, and also how frustrating it must be when they want to communicate and they know what they want to say, but they don't know how to say it yet. And in terms of like babies getting frustrated and just yelling or throwing a tantrum, I don't really like that word, throwing a tantrum in air quotes. But it's a lot of the time it's because they're frustrated because they so badly want to communicate with you and they're still figuring out how to do that. So like you said, empowering them with simple things that will get what they're trying to communicate across to you, whether it's pointing at a picture, whether it's saying a specific word or a specific phrase. I think it, on our end, it's important for us to be mindful of that and paying attention to that and trying to help them figure out how they can communicate that.
Yeah, and I think if we think about how we feel when we're frustrated, how right, difficult it is to find the words and to communicate, how much more difficult is that going to be for a child who doesn't even have those words yet? They don't have that deep vocabulary to share how they're feeling. And so providing those pictures and providing those gestures is a way that's a lot easier for them to access. It's like that caveman brain turning yeah, on and being able to really show what they want.
Yeah, I remember you saying caveman just made me think of what my daughter used to do before she knew like how to say book or the like a word from the title of the book. She would just pick up a book and just chuck it. Like if you were sitting close by, she'd just throw it at you. And it was her way of being like, I want to read this. And it's just funny. Now she'll say book or she'll have one word from the title that she'll say. Like she likes the Llama Llama books. So she'll just be like Llama and she'll just hand the book. But it's funny and it's cool to see how not only like how different every baby is, but like it's so cool to see the steps that of their development. It's amazing to watch. And like you said, I think it's important to leave parents feeling empowered, but also leave your baby feeling empowered. And if you're struggling with that, if you're trying to figure out a way to do that, like, or you need guidance, you need help, you feel like your baby needs guidance or help, or you yourself want to learn more, it's important to reach out to people like you, like pathologists and specialists within the space, so you can learn how to empower yourself, but also empower your baby to essentially communicate with you.
Yeah. And I think leaving parents with that message that it doesn't necessarily mean that there is an issue with your child or a problem with your child. It's a way to get the tools to provide the best learning environment for your child.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is that I'm glad we're opening up and having this conversation, because it's not to say like you're not paying attention to your child or you're not doing this or you're not doing that. It's just giving you ideas. It's just giving you information that you may not have known prior. Because I think I said it before, I don't think that we really spend a lot of time talking about this until, or not that we don't talk about it, but I feel like people don't really spend time looking into it or talking about it until they feel like their child is delayed in their speech. Like they don't really think about it as much before. So I want to open up that conversation so people know these things ahead of time. So hopefully we can avoid people feeling like their child's speech is delayed.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important. Even when I'm talking to people about my live series, which I have really tailored to parents of children who don't have issues and who are continuing to learn, a lot of people come to me and they say, my child is too young. I'm not ready to take the class yet. But The truth is, the younger that you start, and I keep saying this over and over, I'm a little bit like a broken record, but like the earlier that you start using these strategies, the easier that it's going to be for you to incorporate them into your routines, to make them part of your day and to make it really seamless, and also to really help guide your child.
Yeah. And I mean, I know you may feel like you sound like a broken record, but I feel like it's important to continue to say it, because maybe people don't hear it the first couple times.
Yeah, you got to hear it several times. So yeah, start early, do it all the time.
So I wanted to ask too about like the, because we were talking about strategies to use to engage your baby, but also like sound play. So do you do like, are there certain songs that you do with babies or encourage parents to do with their babies?
I love singing with babies. It is my favorite thing. So I use some traditional songs, some made up songs, And some songs that were passed down to me from my bubby, from my grandmother.
Oh, so cool.
You know, there's like a whole combination of things. I really like using the tune of that, like 10 little fingers, and I'll put everything to that tune and I'll just change up the words. But I think songs and finger plays are a really awesome way to engage with babies also, because again, it's combining all the senses. It's combining the hearing and listening, getting them really attuned to the intonation patterns that they need for regular speech. It's the gestures, which are going to help them to be able to communicate before they're really able to. And then it's the words. So one of my favorite things to do with songs as children approach like 1 year is to start leaving one word out of the song to see if the child will correct me.
Okay.
So I might be like, row, row, row your. And the child will be like, oh, wait, it's a boat. So they'll just jump right in because they've heard the song so many times. They know what belongs there. And I know that I'm leaving out a word that has a B sound in it, which is one of the sounds that they've been working on a lot. So they're going to be really encouraged to say that word, to fill that in. And as they get better at that, I'll start leaving out more and more words until they're the one that's in charge of it. And they might wait for me to fill in a word.
Yeah. And I feel like it's not only fun because you're singing and you're letting them hear your voice and the different tones that you use as you sing, but also, like you said, like leaving out certain words, like you're making it like a game for them. And I was chatting about this on one of my other podcast episodes. We were talking about like making things fun for kids is the best way for them to learn, like making it play, like playing with them is the best way for them to learn things. And I think it's so true, starting from like a super young age.
Yeah, I love play. It's the best. And that's why my practice is being down on the floor and playing with kids. I think also pointing out that play doesn't necessarily mean that you need the flashiest toys.
Yeah.
Because I think we are over inundated with toys and things that light up and make sounds. And the thing with those toys is they take the work out of it. There's no reason for your child to communicate because the toy is doing all of the work for you. The toy is talking back to you and the toy is making lights and doing the response. But if you take all of that away and there's no lights, you can turn that into sound. You can turn that reaction into ooh or wow. So I like to pop the batteries out of those and then just see what will happen.
Well, I love that you share that because I think it's so, so true. We just have way too much. There are too many toys. Some of them are way too overstimulating for babies. But like you said, it takes the work out of it for them. And that was one of the things that before we had our daughter, I was like, I just want it to be very minimalistic. Like from a standpoint of like, I just don't want a ton of things. And so then the toys that we did receive, I swear she has played with more things and continues to play with more things that are not toys on a daily basis since she was, I don't even know how old. She's not as interested in them. But like, for example, like thinking of like playing with little farm animals or something, like you're making those different sounds with them. You can play with that with your baby and they'll learn that. But it's say you have something that already makes a sound. They could imitate it, I guess, in theory. But like you said, I think it's important to realize that you don't need all these fancy toys that you think you might need because somebody told you you might need them. Just really getting down on the floor, playing with your baby, singing to them, reading books to them, making sounds with them. It's just, I feel like it's, we forget to go back to the simplicity of things sometimes.
Yeah. And a lot of times, if you do have a lot of toys, what your child is going to be interested in is the box that they all come in. Yep. So just like putting things in the box, taking things out of the box, something as simple as that. I'm even looking at like what I have in front of me on my table, and I don't have kids, but I have like five different things that I can create a language activity out of. And I have a cup, a spray bottle, and a fork. So like, here we go. We're going to make some language happen. And I didn't need any special equipment.
Yeah. And I love that you just shared that because it just shows like how your brain works and how you can take something where you don't really have a lot and you can just make it into something that will work for the kids that you're working with, the families that you're working with, and showing parents that too. Because I think that, like you said, we're so inundated with all of these things that we think that we need, but reminding parents like, hey, we really don't need all of these things. Here are three simple household items that you have that we can take and we can make into something to work with your kids on their sounds or their speech. Like that is so cool.
Yeah. And that's my favorite thing to teach is like, give me an empty paper towel roll and I will show you 10 things that you can do with this. So
maybe that could be part of your live series.
It is.
Oh, is it? Yay!
just because I've become so accustomed to working with families who have different things. They have different toys and they have different abilities to purchase toys. So what can I use and how can I make that come to life so that they don't feel like their child is missing out? Their child is still gaining in the same way and able to play and interact in the same way. You're just using things that you already have around.
Yeah. And I think too, like, whatever your baby and your children see you using, like they are more drawn to using that a lot of the time. They're like, oh, well, mommy and daddy's using this, so I want to use it too. And like you said, like taking the simple things that you have or that you use on a daily basis, like a cup or a bowl or a fork or a spoon, and making that into a game with your child, whether it's a song or whether you're just talking about like certain phrases that they use so they can start to identify certain things, and then celebrating when they do understand something and they start saying something, whether, like you said, whether it's clapping or cheering or just silly little things that might not seem like a lot to us or make a big deal to them. are a big
I'm
deal
glad
to
that
them.
you were able to summarize all of that so eloquently, because this topic gets me so excited. I have so much to share about language development and how to help your child. And I think that it's important to have it in that like cute little package that you just put it in.
Oh, so. I'll have to listen back, because I feel like sometimes I just talk and then sometimes it sounds good and other times I'm like, oh, I need to rephrase that.
Yeah, it's like a beautiful package now. It's like, yes, this is how you do it.
This is what we're doing. So as we're wrapping up this episode, I cannot believe we've been sitting and talking for so long. It feels like it just flew by. But do you have any final like words that you want to leave listeners with, or any final advice?
So I think my biggest piece of advice for parents is to be flexible. Mm. I think as parents, we need to follow our child lead, and that might not necessarily be the direction that your brain is going in. So mm-hmm. just be flexible and open to what is going to happen. If you wanted your child to play with the cup and they want to play with the spoon, let them play with the spoon, get into their world and join them there. And you can go back to the cup later. But I think flexibility is your biggest gift as a parent.
Yeah, I love that you just mentioned that, because I've talked about that a few times on the podcast, talking about paying attention to your child, paying attention to what they're truly interested in, and celebrating that and encouraging that. Because I think it's just like our society and our generation, like the different generations, like we have specific expectations about what babies should be doing at a certain time. And if babies aren't doing something by a certain time, then we get frustrated. Or if they're not doing something that we want them to do, then we get frustrated. And I think it's important to remember, like we've talked about throughout this entire episode, like this is so new for babies. Everything is new on a day-to-day basis. And giving them the time and encouraging them to explore and play and being down on their level, on the same level with them, and like showing that you're interested in what they're doing and talking to them about it to help them with their speech. It's so, so important. And I think following baby's cues, but also like we talked about, like there will become a point where if you are worried that your child is behind in terms of speech or development, or you've noticed certain things that they're really struggling with, it's also very important to reach out to a pathologist or to somebody who's a specialist within the space to get a second opinion. And like you said, it's never too early to do that.
Right. And I think, yeah, once you have that flexibility, you're going to see some real magic happen, because you're not forcing something. You're not forcing something to come together. You're just letting it all happen naturally and holistically. And as you said, if the pieces aren't coming together by a certain point, yes, absolutely reach out for help. But I think the more flexible that you are, the more that you're following your baby's cues, the better suited you are going to be able to guide them on their path.
Agreed. Agreed wholeheartedly. I love that so much. And I think I'm going to continue to share that on episodes, because we forget. I feel like we forget that babies are not little robots and they're not just going to automatically start doing something because we want them to start doing something. And a lot of the time, if we try and kind of follow that path, our babies are going to be like, nope, not going to do that. And then it ends up with everybody feeling frustrated. So like, obviously having boundaries, creating routines are very, very important, but also following your baby's instincts, their cues, just listening to them and paying attention to them and not trying to force things. Because I also feel like there's this pressure of, if they're not doing something by a certain time, there's pressure on the parent, like, oh my goodness, I'm doing something wrong. Or there's pressure on the baby. And then the pressure that the parent feels, the baby starts to feel, because they pick up on everything. So I think I love that that was the last piece of advice that you left people with, is to just go with it, follow your baby's cues, follow their instincts. One of my favorite words that I've learned in this past year of being a mom is just surrendering to it, and just being present, being there, and going with it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's going to be so helpful for you, because that's going to help your baby develop into who they are as a person. As you said, they're not robots. They're going to do their own thing. If you want them to do a certain thing, they're going to purposefully avoid that.
Yes.
Because they're creating their own path. They're creating their own non-robot identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so true. And then even think about like in high school where your parents are like, don't do this. And you're like, okay, I'm going to go do that just because you told me not to. But before we wrap up this episode, could you share with everybody where they can find you? I'm going to include it in the show notes as well, but I just love hearing where people can find you.
Sure. So most of everything that I share is on Instagram at Speech with JWo. I also have some articles and magazines. There are links there. I am in The Bump and all that other stuff. So you can find me there. But most all of it is at Speech with JWo.
Awesome. And so if people wanted to reach out to you, would you want them to send you an email or send you a message on Instagram? What would be best?
They could do either. My email address is jocelyn.m.wood@gmail.com. You can put that in the show notes. Also, if you have a more specific question that you need answered, that would be the best way to contact me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so, so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge and your expertise and chatting with us. I just feel like this conversation was so, so awesome. I'm very excited for parents to hear it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I love that you're providing this resource for parents. I think that it's going to be so useful and so helpful for them. I've listened to a bunch of your other episodes, and it's just awesome what you're putting out into the world.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate that. That means a lot because I feel like these are things that I never talked about when I was younger before I was a parent, and I think that we need more resources to open up these conversations because it matters for parents and for babies. So thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. All right. Have a great day.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, listeners. As we said, if you have any questions for myself or questions for Jocelyn, please feel free to reach out. If you found this episode helpful for you, if you feel like you learned a lot or someone you know would benefit from it, please, please, please share it with your friends, with your family, on your social media networks, whatever you feel like would help reach more people. Or if you would like to leave a review, that also helps spread awareness for the podcast as well. I hope you guys are all having a great week, and we will be back next week. Thank you. Bye.